Hi everybody, great to see everybody here today. Welcome to anybody who's here who has not been to a Marxism conference before. I'd just like to outline the talk that I'm going to go the talk I'm going to present, why we think it's an important topic to raise this year. And it's basically an important topic to raise this year, revolutionaries and revolutionary organisations and participation in elections, because of the fact that there is an election coming up next year. So in this short presentation, I'd like to just go through some ideas about why we stand in elections, the arguments that are used against our standing in elections by other left groups, people and tendencies and things like this. Then I want to get into a brief look at some local, recent, international experience. And so that brief look at some other experience helps to build the argument for standing in the elections. And then finally, I'll go back and talk about our position on the next elections. So the question of why we stand in elections, if I could just start by breaking this down a bit. One reason, and one of the most fundamental reasons, is that we aim to raise our political ideas in a brief period, that's the election period, in which workers' interest in politics is heightened. So basically, we have a very low level of participation in national politics by working class people in New Zealand, and that we use that time where politics is emphasised to present our case. Another aspect here is that we feel that we really have to establish a clear anti-capitalist and socialist line when we go into elections and at the level of national politics. We feel that if we don't stand on a revolutionary platform, then we'll be compelled to support capitalist parties or else abstain from elections. This is what we have seen, for example, from the Socialist Workers' Organisation. In 1999, we were told it was Labour Greens. In 2002, we were told that it was Vote Green. And then in 2005, it was an abstention in the form of, we need a party that represents us. So it's kind of putting the question to the working class that they need representation, that they, you know, it's almost perceived that they, the socialist worker, need representation rather than that they are the party that is aiming to provide representation for working class interests, and therefore and do not stand to represent those interests. So we think that standing in the elections gives a clear trajectory, and the organisations that that do it provide a clarifying role. Not a confusing role. It must be confusing, for example, to hear Vote Green one year, and then a few years later, the Greens are the big demons who are not doing enough for climate change. You know, and we were told at the time that it was part of strategy, and it's strategic vote for Green, yet Greens are now the enemy of the environmental movement, things like this, and the fact is that Labour twice could have formed coalitions with the Greens, but were too right-wing to do it. So we don't see this as strategic at all, and I don't mean to be seen to be picking on the SW here, but it is an issue that should be raised, seeing SW now practically are the only other significant left organisation in the country, far left organisation. Another reason why it's useful to go into elections is because it enables us to raise the single issue demands coherently. So, of course, there are hundreds of single issues going on that people are struggling over, but we find that if we take these issues to the national level, then it creates a coherency. And this is like a dialectical process. So, for example, open borders. On our platform, we have the demand for open borders. And in the next election, if the five Iranian prisoners are still being held in Mount Eden without charge, then we'll be using our idea of open borders to coincide with their struggle. And it's dialectical in the sense that we're raising their issues, and at the same time we can use their particular issues to give evidence to and to support the line that we're putting across. So I'd say that those are the main reasons why we do participate in elections and take elections very seriously. So right now I'd just like to get into the arguments that are put against us. Some of these arguments I would say are less of arguments but more like complaints or dogmas, and in some cases slag-offs, and they're not coherent political arguments, so that's what I will address now. The first kind of argument is put across is that a party shouldn't support a parliamentary road. I'd say very clearly that we do not at all support a parliamentary road to socialism. We are broadly Leninist, as much as it is possible to be Leninist in this period. And as Leninists, we ascribe to the position that a revolutionary party should proceed in zigzags. So in one period, it would be entirely appropriate to stand in the elections, and in another period, it would not be appropriate at all. And our organisation has no doubt for a second that that the trajectory of our movements will end in a showdown between the oppressed and the ruling class. And so that is presupposed. So the term for our approach, I guess, is called electoralism. It means that we openly recognise that the electoral, the parliamentary path will never satisfy the needs of the working class, but we use elections in a particular period. One of the most annoying kind of arguments that they use against us, and a small group down in Dunedin called the International Socialist Organisation, come up with this complaint as well. They say that they will be embarrassed by the size of the left vote, because of course, when you're a party of this size and in this period of class struggle and downturn of class struggle, the vote is not going to be that big. But we'd just say that we'd actually be far more embarrassed if we were going out putting up posters saying "Stop Brash," which was what eventually became their activity around the last elections. Now, the "Stop Brash" position, we've had some discussion here about it, but the "Stop Brash" position is basically a negative argument for the Labour Party, and we'd be totally embarrassed, and not only embarrassed but also ashamed to be carrying that message out to workers. Another argument that's coming up is that, and this argument is getting stronger, is that the Workers' Party or revolutionary organisations aren't connected to the actual movements of people like unions are. So there has been a strong resurgence of a syndicalist perspective, I think, in New Zealand. And syndicalism, I think, is wrong. It's talking about building unions, albeit more radical unions, as if instead of just unionism, we have radical unionism, and that's going to somehow lead to some type of revolutionary conclusions. We would say that's wrong. We'd say it's wrong because it excludes the high political demands that we put forward, and the high political demands that we put forward are entirely necessary in a period where the class consciousness is at the low state that it is at the moment. So we want to raise high demands that lift people up and lift people's expectations and make people think about the possibility of another world and some frames of reference for this other world. In elections, you deal with the issue of who holds power in society. You don't deal with that issue directly through organising militant unions. So this syndicalism has got stronger amongst young activists in particular, syndicalism does coincide with anarchism, because there's an absence of theory on this, an absence of willingness to take on the state. So it does connect with anarchism, and therefore does connect with young people in this period of low class consciousness. I think you can also see aspects of this syndicalism in some of the trade union leaderships as well, whose Social Democratic Party has basically failed, and so now they are moving into this area of building more radical unions. And this is where a variation to this argument that it has to be through unions connected to the people, etc. There is a variation to this which is quite valid and is put forward by people such as Matt McCartan, that you can't actually have a political party without an army. So this is a more valid kind of side of that argument. And I think we'd have to say that we agree with that, but that simply means that we take a two-pronged approach. So this means we're participating in people's organisations, genuine unions, genuine union activity, as well as building a revolutionary organisation. You have to, although we recognise that we proceed in zigzags, we also have to recognise that you have to start out as you intend to continue. It's not a stageist thing where we will build quite militant union membership and then be able to take people through to revolutionary politics. The one that we hate the most, the criticism that we hate the most, I think, about us, about our standing in the elections, is this idea that we'd be taking away votes from Labor. We would have heard a bit of that earlier today. A lot of people here will be sympathetic with this, but still don't want to put up an opposition against them electorally. And some people might think that the word opposition is a little bit too strong. You know, you've got 30 cater and you're calling it an opposition. But we're saying, well, actually, it is an opposition. It is actually creating a kind of divide. It's actually breaking down consensus amongst certain groups of people who would otherwise support Labor throughout the trade union movement and things like this. And it brings pressure and exposure against people who hold up that Labor Party line, the lesser evil type approach. Okay, so given that I've said this stuff, people might want to question the potential of an organisation like ours standing in elections. So just to kind of get into that question of potential, I'd like to raise a few international examples of where socialist parties have struggled to enter into elections and with some success. The Philippines is not comparable to New Zealand, but it's very topical at the moment. Bayan Muna is an organisation called People's First. Within People's First, we have Anak Pawis, Toiling Masses, as well as Gabriella, which stands for the Advancement of Women. These people were managed to have 5 Congress people elected. And what we see here is really, and this really blows out of the water all the people who say talking about standing in elections being the parliamentary road. This is a very good example, because what we have here is a congressman who has actually been in prison for a year and a half. You know, so it's really recognising that it is camp of the enemy type stuff. If you're in parliament, when we do manage to get somebody into parliament, it would be in the camp of the enemy. A number of comrades in these parties are shot, killed and detained, etc. And with the recent May 14 election, there's been very intensive electoral repression, which people might read about in the Spark magazine. But as I say, while it provides an example, it's not entirely relevant to the situation of a Western industrial country. So to look at some industrial examples, I'll just run through about 4 very quickly. And again, this is the only intention of this is to show that there is a space for participation. So, for example, Joe Higgins, who recently lost an election campaign of the militant tendency, which I understand was expelled from the Labor Party in the 1980s. This led to the formation of the Socialist Party. He was elected as an MP, both in 1997 and 2002, and recently closely lost his seat. This is camp of the enemy stuff. From his position as an elected MP, he campaigned against non-collection of refuse in 2003, leading him to prison. In 2005, he was a leading force in the campaign to bring back a young Nigerian person who was deported. Now, if you could imagine if we had an MP in New Zealand, a socialist MP in New Zealand, batting for Tak Shila in early 2004 when she was deported back to Sri Lanka, we can see the kind of possibilities there. Also famous, and I say famous because it was a lot in the media, was the fight for a large group of Turkish construction workers employed by Gamma Industry, who basically siphoned $30 million out of their wages. And so the Gamma case and the Nigeria case are examples of how socialists in the camp in parliament can raise issues at the top political level. And these types of the issues in that example are the issues that are increasingly important for the labour movement, the right of immigrant workers and things like this. In France, we've had the example of L'Ouvrier, or Workers' Struggle. Alette Laguia, for example, in 2002, scored 5.72% of the vote and also became an MP. This year, the L'Ouvrier backed a socialist party for the president, the socialist party for the presidency, which from here seems to be a step backwards. However, they provided, I think, a kind of a bright way forward, building cells of support for revolutionary politics in the workplace. And retaining also a semi-clandestine nature as an organisation, as required by the turbulence of class politics in France. So this is another example of how a revolutionary organisation can participate, but still in a number of ways be ready for bigger social upheavals. In Germany, we have had the example of the WASG, Labour and Social Justice. And that party was brought together to combat the centre-left parties, was formed in 2005 and ran in a state election in which it gained over 180,000 votes. But this party is now moving into contentious grounds, and some organised tendencies and leaders are fulfilling plans to merge the organisation with the former pro-Soviet Socialist Unity Party, which has been involved in carrying out cuts and things like this. Originally that was just an electoral kind of alliance, but now is to be a fully-fledged merger. So this isn't something which we would support, but again, it shows to us the possibilities of raising socialist politics. Galloway. Galloway and Respect the Unity Coalition. Basically, Galloway had a Labour Party background. He was expelled from Labour in 2003 because of his opposition to the war in Iraq. And basically, then he was elected to Bethnal Green and Bow seat and Bow seat, and basically this was in May 2005, and this was basically done on the work of socialists. So it really shows that we can build enough of a, there can be a socialist or radical movement built that can actually have the physical and organisational capacity to get somebody elected. Within Respect, Galloway put forward a social democratic or left social democratic kind of perspective. Lots of left-wing debates surrounding Respect, especially with regard to its viewing of gay rights as a shibboleth, that it shouldn't be a shibboleth. Though it seems Respect has now improved on this, so this was all part of a trade-off for Muslim support, and this is something that revolutionaries are particularly against, is trading off support for different sections of the left minorities, of groups within the working class. So this stuff kind of confirmed the lack of political clarity in the Galloway Respect the Unity movement. Another thing was that Galloway insisted that the world would be a better place if the Soviet Union was still around, which definitely is not a revolutionary perspective. So there are serious differences within the revolutionary left and within the far left. But the essential point I'm making here is that there is room in the West to raise radical politics at the parliamentary level. In the case of Respect, this has been at the expense of some groups and at the expense of a Marxist outlook. And has included bouts of opportunism, or maybe has been opportunist with bouts of socialism or something like this. For example, things like standing for wealth distribution instead of creating a powerful working class movement, these types of things. So I'll just take this talk back to our experience in the elections, what our organisation itself has experienced. When we stand in the elections, the costs in terms of party money are fairly low, of about $300 per candidate or something like this. It enables our party to have advertising and print media, as well as articles about our candidates, and this gains a lot of exposure for the organisation, and we do actually pick up ones and twos through this process. In 2002, we stood three candidates, and by 2005, we were able to stand eight candidates. So the thing about standing these candidates is that we have found that elections provide this very excellent kind of training ground, very excellent political training for members. So that's like public speaking, dealing with the media, intensive organising work around that period, hoardings, leaflets, mail drops, mail outs, this type of thing. And it also gives our candidates a chance to debate with bourgeois politicians, but more important than that, talking to working class people about explicitly revolutionary politics. So I would hope that during the discussion there will be some discussion on the 2008 elections. What our approach is at the moment is that we are trying to register enough members so that we can stand on the party list. So this would include recruiting another 300 people to the organisation, which is not a very easy task. And most of those members are supportive, but very much ghost members, really. So So we've got that task going, but we do not exclude other possibilities at this stage that might arise before the next election, that will enable us to take our ideas out there more strongly.